In the hills of Guanacaste, in the coastal breeze of Limón, in every village kitchen from the mountains to the markets, the story of Costa Rica is simmering in pots, wrapped in leaves, served with rice, and spoken through spice. This is more than food. This is culture, resistance, and identity on a plate. From the sacred simplicity of Gallo Pinto to the twice-fried wisdom of patacons, from Afro-Caribbean ceviche to indigenous tamales passed down through generations, every dish tells a story of survival, creativity, and quiet revolution. These aren't just recipes. They are memories, heirlooms, anchors of national pride. This is Costa Rica, not told by textbooks, but by the hands that cook it. Welcome to Caribbean History, Costa Rica's culinary soul, a 10-chapter journey through food storytelling, ancestral knowledge, and the powerful flavors that built a nation. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. They say the day doesn't start until the beans and rice touch the fire. In the kitchens of rural Costa Rica, in the modest homes of the Central Valley, and on the coastal breeze of Limón, there's a sound, the sizzle of garlic and onion dancing in oil. The dish is humble, but its story carries the soul of a nation. This is not just food. This is identity, memory, and resistance served on a breakfast plate. Gallo Pinto, the soul of Costa Rica's morning table. In the early hours before dawn breaks over Costa Rica's Central Valley, the scent of onion, sweet pepper, and garlic fills the air. Not perfume, not flowers, but the first breath of a new day. It rises with the smoke of wood stoves, creeping through cracked window panes and open doorways, a signal that breakfast is near. At the heart of it all is Gallo Pinto, a dish so simple in ingredients, yet so profoundly woven into the soul of a country. Rice, beans, a splash of sauce, a pan warmed by love and habit. But this isn't just about food. It's about identity, about the roots of a people who survived colonization, slavery, and poverty, and managed to turn yesterday's leftovers into today's cultural anthem. This is the story of Gallo Pinto. The historical soil where beans first sprouted. The roots of Gallo Pinto are older than the Republic of Costa Rica itself. Long before the arrival of the Spanish, indigenous peoples like the Bribri, Corotega, and Cabicar cultivated beans in the volcanic soil of the region. Beans were life, protein, trade, spirit. But it was the Spanish who brought rice, a grain foreign to the Americas, carried aboard ships and planted first on large haciendas. Rice was expensive, refined, and foreign. Beans, by contrast, were local, wild, and native. When these two were eventually combined, a new culinary identity was born. The Afro-Caribbean influence, particularly from enslaved Africans and Jamaican immigrants who settled in the Limón province, added layers to this evolution. Coconut milk, fried plantains, and the sacred use of seasoning as expression. From this fusion, Gallo Pinto emerged not as a luxury dish, but as a survival strategy, an efficient, filling, protein-packed meal that wasted nothing and nourished everything. And like so many cultural dishes across the Caribbean and Latin America, its brilliance lay not in its extravagance, but in its resilience. 2. What's in a name? The Spotted Rooster. The name Gallo Pinto means spotted rooster. And while there are no feathers or fowl in the pot, the dish does resemble the speckled pattern of a rooster's back, black beans flecking white rice like feathers. There's debate, even regional rivalry, between Costa Rica and Nicaragua about who invented it first. But in Costa Rica, Gallo Pinto became more than a dish. It became a symbol, a plate you eat to start your day, a cultural marker served to tourists as a welcome, a shared food that cuts across class, race, and province. It is the great equalizer. Whether you're eating it from a hand-carved wooden bowl in a jungle hut or from a ceramic plate in a 5-star hotel in San Jose, Gallo Pinto is Gallo Pinto. 3. The sacred process, how Gallo Pinto is made. Sound of oil heating in a pan, light sizzle of onion, a wooden spoon stirring. The process begins the night before. Rice is cooked fresh in many homes, but the best Gallo Pinto, many say, is made with rice from yesterday. Drier, firmer, more textured. Beans, typically black, are slow cooked with garlic, onion, a bay leaf, and a pinch of cumin or oregano until soft and fragrant. Crucially, the bean broth is reserved, This is the soul of the flavor. In the morning, a skillet is warmed. Oil or butter coats the bottom. Onions and bell peppers are sautéed until translucent. Then comes the splash, a ladle of bean broth, and a healthy shake of salsa Lozano, a tangy, peppery Costa Rican condiment similar to Worcestershire sauce, but with a unique herbal sweetness. Then comes the rice, folded in slowly. The beans follow, stirred in until the whole mixture is gently speckled, never soggy. Not too wet, not too dry. Some regions add cilantro, others coconut milk. But at the heart of it all is a balance, a unity of two simple staples dancing together. And then the silence, a moment when the pan sits untouched on low heat, forming a slight crust at the bottom, toasted, almost caramelized. This moment is called El Punto, the point, and it's sacred. 4. Breakfast as ritual, how it's served. Gallo Pinto is served with eggs, fried, scrambled, or poached. Alongside are fried sweet plantains, a wedge of white cheese, a dollop of Nutella, Costa Rican sour cream, and a cup of strong black coffee. In homes across the country, it's the first meal shared, the first story told, the first laugh of the day. Children grow up watching their mothers prepare it. Teenagers try their hand at making their first pinto. Grandfathers criticize the seasoning, lovingly. It's what's eaten before school, before work, before labor in the fields. And sometimes it's eaten again at dinner, recycled with bits of sausage or scrambled egg, Gallo Pinto reinvented once more. V. Regional voices, the taste of diversity. In Limón, where Afro-Caribbean influence runs deep, Gallo Pinto is made with coconut milk, giving it a creamy, rich taste and deeper aroma. In Guanacaste, red beans are often substituted and tortillas are toasted crisp. In urban San Jose, young chefs have taken Gallo Pinto upscale, adding avocado, microgreens, or pairing it with mimosas at brunch cafes. But the core remains. Even abroad, Costa Rican families carry the dish with them, recreating it in U.S. apartments, European flats, and backpacker hostels across the world. It becomes a tether, a way to stay rooted, even in exile. 6. Symbolism, the national plate. Costa Rica abolished its army in 1948. Its national priorities became education, health, and cultural identity. And Gallo Pinto, in many ways, embodies that ethos. It is nonviolent, nourishing without dominating. It is inclusive, eaten by all, regardless of wealth. It is sustainable, made from what's available, not imported. It is resistant, born of scarcity, it became a point of pride. 7. Final reflection, the spoon that stirred the nation. As the morning sun rises over the mountains and the last scrape of rice leaves the pan, Gallo Pinto reminds us that identity isn't always loud. It's not always heroic, or complex, or ceremonial. Sometimes identity is quiet, daily, made from rice and beans, stirred by a grandmother's hand, seasoned with memory, and served with love. Casado, the married plate that holds a nation together. In Costa Rica, a plate of food is more than fuel. It's a mirror of the land, the people, and their peace-loving spirit. On this plate, everything is balanced. Rice meets beans. Salad rests beside sweet plantains. A grilled steak or fresh fish adds flavor to simplicity. But what makes this meal sacred is not what's on it. It's what it represents. The casado is a story of union, tradition, and the quiet resistance of everyday life. What is a casado? More than a meal, a metaphor. In Spanish, casado means married. And the casado plate, Costa Rica's quintessential lunch, reflects that concept with striking beauty. It's a marriage of components, each different, none dominant, all working in harmony. A scoop of white rice sits beside a ladle of savory beans. A piece of meat, grilled chicken, steak, pork, or fish rests nearby. Bright salad, fried ripe plantains, and often a spoonful of pasta or stewed vegetables. Every casado is slightly different, but the symbolism remains. This is the plate of the working people, of farmers, bus drivers, school teachers, and clerks. It is balance on a plate, nourishment not just of body, but of national identity. The history of the casado, colonial roots, working class heart. The origins of the casado are debated, but most historians agree it emerged during the late 19th to early 20th century, when Costa Rica was transitioning from subsistence agriculture into a more urban, structured society. Railways, banana plantations, and coffee cooperatives brought new demands for labor, and laborers needed filling meals to sustain long hours under the sun. The cassado became the go-to meal for these men, and later women, who needed protein, carbs, fiber, and fat, all in one package. It was cost-effective, filling, and flexible. But more than that, it was deeply symbolic of the new Costa Rican identity forming at the time. Peaceful, industrious, and unified across diversity. Some food historians suggest the term cassado originated in sodas, small, family-run diners, where married men would order the same balanced plate every day. Others believe it reflects the traditional idea of a wife preparing a full, satisfying meal for her husband. Either way, it became part of the cultural fabric. Anatomy of a cassado, dish breakdown. A traditional cassado typically includes rice, steamed white rice, sometimes flavored with garlic or bouillon. Beans, red or black beans cooked in broth with onion, bell pepper, and cilantro. Meat or fish, grilled steak, bistec, pork chop, chicken breast, or breaded fish fillet. Salad, often shredded cabbage with tomato, lime juice, and a touch of mayonnaise or vinegar. Fried plantains, sweet and golden, the cassado's soul food. Extras, spaghetti, beets, squash, or even picadillo, a ground meat and vegetable mix. Everything is served on one single plate, never touching too much, but always in harmony. It's a marriage of flavors and textures, rich and light, sweet and salty, hot and cool. The cultural power of the plate. The cassado, much like Gallo Pinto, is about resourcefulness and sustainability. It uses what's available, respects seasonal vegetables, and leans on traditional methods of flavoring, not industrialized shortcuts. It is eaten in homes, schools, government cafeterias, roadside sodas, and fancy restaurants. It is what politicians eat to show humility, what travelers seek to experience Costa Rican culture authentically, what workers eat on 30-minute breaks, seated at plastic tables under tin roofs. Yet beneath its modest appearance lies a deep philosophical metaphor: unity without uniformity. Each item has its space, but they come together to complete the experience. This mirrors Costa Rica's post-war vision, a democratic, peaceful society built on education, equality, and national pride, not militarism. Regional and modern variations. Coastal cassado. Fresh-caught fish replaces red meat. More tropical fruits or coconut slaws might appear. Urban cassado. You might find avocado slices, sautéed spinach, or gourmet breaded meats on the plate. Vegetarian cassado. Common in eco-tourist areas. Beans, rice, plantains, and picadillo with vegetables or tofu. Limón Province cassado. Often incorporates rice and beans cooked with coconut milk, merging Afro-Caribbean flavor. Today's cassado has evolved, but the essentials remain. No matter how it changes, the dish always reflects cultural balance, national humility, and regional adaptation. Cassado and the tourism narrative. In recent decades, Costa Rica has positioned itself as a beacon of eco-conscious tourism, culinary storytelling, and cultural pride. The cassado features heavily in this campaign. It is marketed to tourists not as exotic, but as honest. It invites people to eat like a tico, to sit at a soda with locals, watch the sky shift over banana trees, and taste the lived experience of the country. Chefs and cultural educators use the cassado as a teaching tool, a way to explain sustainability, post-colonial identity, Afro-Caribbean culinary survival, and indigenous farming systems. It's not just food, it's food heritage, served in a form anyone can understand. Symbolism and everyday resistance. In a world rushing toward fast food and cultural erasure, the cassado is a quiet act of resistance. It says, we are not in a hurry. We believe in balance. And we feed each other, not just ourselves. It's a dish that doesn't seek to impress, but to ground. Not to sell, but to nourish. It is how Costa Rica says this is who we are. The final bite, a philosophy on a plate. As a meal, the cassado is humble. But as a metaphor, it is powerful. It teaches the value of small things, of ordinary care, of building strong foundations with simple ingredients, of honoring the marriage between nature and nurture, land and labor, tradition and change. Every country has a dish like this, but few celebrate it as openly, as proudly, and as consistently as Costa Rica does with the cassado. And so this dish becomes more than a plate. It becomes a flag made of food, a spoonful of national values, a married life in every bite. Olla de carne, the rural stew of the land. In the highlands of Costa Rica, where clouds drift low and the land breathes slow, a pot simmers. Not fast, not loud, just long enough for bones to give up their truth. In this pot lives the memory of grandmothers, of volcanic earth, of indigenous farming cycles. Alya Dakarn isn't just a stew, it's a rural ritual. A feast of root and bone, of patience and place. This is the story of the country's most ancient comfort. A dish of the land, origins of Alya Dakarn. Alya Dakarn, or pot of meat, is a traditional Costa Rican stew that dates back to pre-colonial indigenous food systems, later shaped by Spanish culinary structure and Afro-Caribbean techniques of flavor layering. It was born in the mountains, in rural valleys, in fields where farmers worked with the rhythm of the seasons, not the clock. The original concept was simple. Take the toughest cuts of meat and make them tender. Surround them with the blessings of the land. Tubers, greens, squashes, herbs, and let time do what fire alone cannot. Before the Spanish conquest, indigenous peoples like the Cabecar and Barruca cooked stews using stone pits, local plants, and wild game. After colonization, beef and cattle systems were introduced, and thus the Alya was born, a pot not just for meat, but for memory. Anatomy of the stew. What's inside Alya Dakarn? No two households make it exactly the same, but the traditional Alya includes beef shank or short ribs, bone in for marrow flavor. Yuca cassava, a starchy root with ancient indigenous roots. Chayote, a light green squash with a watery crunch. Tequisque, a purple root similar to taro. Camote, sweet potato, and nampi, regional staples. Green plantain, peeled and chopped into thick discs. Corn on the cob, cut into thirds. Carrots, celery, and onion. Cilantro, oregano, garlic, and sometimes cumin or achiote for color. Water is used as the base, not broth. The meat gives it the flavor over time. The dish is slow-cooked over wood stoves or gas ranges for hours. Sometimes the fire begins before sunrise. The final stew is not spicy. It's earthy, honest, and heavy with root. The cultural rhythm. Alya as a Sunday tradition. If gallo pinto is breakfast and casado is lunch, Alya Dakarn is the Sunday meal, a ritual in many Costa Rican homes. It is rarely rushed, often shared, prepared for family gatherings, visiting neighbors, or simply to mark the end of a long work week. In this context, food becomes emotional storytelling. The pot bubbles slowly, just like conversation. Children peel vegetables. Fathers return from the market with fresh corn. Grandmothers stir and taste and stir again. You don't eat Alya on the go. You sit. You share. You remember. It's also one of the few dishes that binds all regions of Costa Rica, from San Jose to Guanacaste, from Limon to Punarenas. Each region brings a slight twist, but the core remains rural, rooted, and restorative. Symbolism of the ingredients, roots that heal. Costa Rica is a country built on agricultural economy. Coffee, bananas, pineapples, and sugarcane dominate exports. But the foods used in Alya Dakarn are not for tourists. They are for the people. Every item in the pot has meaning. Yuca and nampi represent indigenous resilience. Corn, a sacred crop throughout Mesoamerica. Beef bones, a symbol of colonial blending. The European introduction of cattle, now fully naturalized into local food identity. Green plantain, rooted in Afro-Caribbean adaptation, filling and sustaining. Cilantro and oregano, ancient herbs of the land, used in both medicine and cuisine. When they all meet in a single pot, it becomes a ceremony of land, labor, and life. Preparation as practice, a culinary deep dive. To prepare Alya Dakarn is not simply to follow steps. It's to participate in intergenerational knowledge. Here's the traditional method. Boil beef shanks or ribs in water with salt, garlic, and onion. Skim the froth. Let it simmer for 2 to 3 hours. Chop root vegetables into large chunks. Add hardest roots first, yuca, nampi, sweet potatoes. After 20 to 30 minutes, add chayote, corn, and carrots. Add herbs, plantain, and a little achiote if desired. Simmer until everything is fork tender, but not mushy. Serve in a bowl with broth and a side of white rice. Some families include a wedge of avocado, a slice of lime, or even a small fresh tortilla on the side. The stew is rarely served alone. It's part of a larger event, a communal act, regional variations, and modern fusion. Guanacaste region. Alya may include sour orange juice or cumin for a twist. Limon province. plantains might be fried instead of boiled, and coconut milk could sneak in. Urban spins. Some upscale restaurants now serve deconstructed versions. Smaller portions, fancy cuts, but always in tribute. But even in evolution, the dish is grounded. It's unlikely to ever become trendy in the Instagram sense, because it is timeless. The symbol of slowness, cultural resistance through food. In modern Costa Rica, where fast food chains multiply and modern lifestyles rush everything, olla de carne remains one of the last defenders of slowness. It teaches time, patience, layering, tradition. This stew resists gentrification not through exclusion, but through endurance. It stays relevant by being emotionally unshakable. You remember who made it, what house it was served in, whose lap you sat on while it boiled. Closing reflection, a pot of generations. To serve olla de carne is to pass down something unspoken. It tells the story of volcanic soil and highland farmers, of migrant laborers and enslaved Africans, of indigenous roots that never died, of grandmothers who didn't write recipes down, they simply remembered. And in the Caribbean context, it ties into the broader food story, one where stewing, simmering, and sharing reflect a culinary resistance to speed, scarcity, and erasure. In a pot of meat, we find more than sustenance. We find a language, a lineage, a land. Chifrijo, the barroom revolution in a bowl. In Costa Rica's pulsing cantinas, where football games echo from flickering TVs and bottles of imperial clink against weathered wood, a new national symbol was born. Not from ancient roots, but from nightlife. Chifrijo, a bold layered bowl of pork belly, beans, and rice, didn't come from a grandmother's kitchen. It came from the bars. But make no mistake, this isn't bar food. This is a rebellion, a challenge to tradition, a new voice in the country's culinary story. The birth of Chifrijo, a 1990s creation with deep resonance. Unlike the ancestral Gallo Pinto or the centuries-old olla de carne, Chifrijo is a relatively new player on the Costa Rican food scene. Born in the 1990s in the capital city of San Jose. But despite its youth, its cultural impact has been explosive. The name is a fusion. Chi from chicharron, fried pork belly. Frijo from frijoles, beans. The story goes that a San Jose bar owner, tired of the same old bar snacks, fries, chips, greasy meats, created a new type of bowl for his regulars. One that was protein-packed, spicy, textural, and shareable. His customers loved it. Word spread. And soon, Chifrijo was on menus across the nation, from downtown dives to coastal restaurants. It was fast, loud, unapologetic. And in that way, it mirrored a new Costa Rica, urban, expressive, and proudly informal. Anatomy of the bowl. What's in a chifrijo? A proper chifrijo is served in a deep bowl and eaten with a spoon. No knife, no fork, no need for ceremony. The classic layers. White rice, warm and slightly sticky, forming the base. Red or black beans, cooked soft with garlic, onion, and herbs. Chicharron, crispy, golden pork belly or deep-fried pork chunks. Pico de gallo, chopped tomato, onion, cilantro, lime, and salt. Avocado slices, fresh, creamy, and cold. Hot sauce, optional but common. Tortilla chips or fried plantains, served on the side or crumbled on top. The flavors build vertically. Each bite gives a different ratio of crunch, softness, spice, and fat. The dish is dense, flavorful, and always served hot and fast. Unlike the tranquil slowness of olla de carne, chifrijo hits you hard. It's for game nights, loud laughter, and shared stories. A symbol of urban identity, San Jose's culinary flag. As Costa Rica evolved, so did its food identity. The rural traditions of rice and beans met the urban nightlife of cantinas, soccer stadiums, and food trucks. Chifrijo reflects this shift. It's not tied to ancient rituals. It's not passed down by abuelas. It's not eaten for breakfast or Sunday rest. Instead, chifrijo belongs to the afterwork crowd, the night owls, the weekend warriors, the beer drinkers, the informal workers, to a younger Costa Rica eager to forge its own taste of nationalism. This was food of resistance, not to colonial powers, but to tradition itself, to hierarchy, to structure. It said, "We don't need to inherit. We can invent. Class, access, and innovation. Food as cultural message." There's something distinctly democratic about chifrijo. It's not expensive. It's not imported. It doesn't require silverware. And yet, it feels indulgent. The ingredients are common: rice, beans, pork, tomato, but their construction elevates them. And in this way, chifrijo embodies a post-colonial culinary power. It transforms peasant staples into a dish of pride and pleasure. It repurposes the everyday into something to savor, loudly, socially, unapologetically. This is the flavor of freedom, not from colonizers, but from pretension, from old rules, from culinary gatekeeping. And this makes chifrijo a modern-day folk hero, a tasty act of defiance, controversy, and ownership. Who really owns chifrijo? As the dish gained fame, so did legal battles. In 2014, the original creator tried to trademark the name chifrijo, claiming culinary ownership over a now national dish. Other bar owners pushed back, arguing that no one could own what had become part of the people. This conflict raised big questions in Costa Rican society. Can food be intellectual property? Can a nation's culture be branded? And what happens when something invented for fun becomes sacred? The legal system ultimately ruled that chifrijo was too culturally widespread to be claimed. It belonged to everyone now. And in that ruling, chifrijo became not just a bowl of food, but a cultural battleground for identity, capitalism, and communal ownership, regional variations, and Caribbean influence. Though born in San Jose, chifrijo quickly spread to the Caribbean coasts and rural zones, where each region added its own spice. Limon Province, you might find jerk-seasoned pork belly or scotch bonnet, infused beans. Guanacaste, some add plantain chips or grilled cheese cubes. Tourist regions, avocado mousse, artisanal chips, or pickled onions elevate the flavor. Still, the heart of the dish remains the same, rough, rich, and rhythmically layered. Social identity through the spoon. Chifrijo is now served at football stadiums, family barbecues, graduation parties, weddings, political rallies, even in fancy gastro pubs. It is Costa Rica's nachos, its ramen, its poke bowl, except uniquely Caribbean, uniquely rebellious, and proudly grounded in local agriculture. Pork from rural farms, beans from volcanic valleys, cilantro from backyard gardens. It is the dish of the everyman, but more importantly, of the now generation. Final reflection: the revolution will be served in a bowl. In the global Caribbean story, where food tells tales of slavery, survival, and cultural resistance, chifrijo represents a new chapter. A chapter written not in the past, but in the present moment. Not by ancient ancestors, but by modern bartenders. Not by ceremony, but by cheer. And that is the power of cultural food evolution. Some dishes honor what came before. Chifrijo honors what comes next. Tamales ticos, wrapped in leaves, filled with legacy. Before there was plastic, before there were recipes written down, there were hands. And those hands wrapped stories in green banana leaves. Tamales ticos are not just food. They are time capsules. Labor, love, migration, spiritual tradition. Born of indigenous roots and reshaped by colonization and memory, this Costa Rican tamal is far more than holiday fare. It is an edible family heirloom, a gift, a prayer, a return home. Ancient roots, the Mesoamerican genesis of tamales. Long before the concept of Costa Rica existed, before borders carved the land, tamales were already being prepared by Corotega and Nicoya indigenous peoples. In sacred ceremonies, maize dough was steamed in leaves, filled with herbs, meat, or ash, and used as food offerings to the gods. This method of preparing corn-based food wrapped in leaves dates back over 4,000 years and is considered one of the oldest continuously made foods in the Americas. Tamales weren't invented by colonists. They are indigenous resistance food, born in ritual, agriculture, and cosmic alignment. The wrapping was spiritual. The masa symbolic of earth, the leaf of protection, the filling of life force. Colonial rewriting. Spanish ingredients meet native technique. When the Spanish arrived in the 1500s, they brought pork, rice, olives, and capers, all foreign to indigenous diets. Over time, these ingredients were fused with native masa, creating what we now know as tamales ticos. These tamales reflected cultural compromise, but also culinary resilience. Corn remained the base, sacred and untouched. The filling, however, transformed. From this blend of indigenous wrapping and European interior emerged a dish that today symbolizes the Costa Rican Christmas season, family togetherness, and the act of giving food as memory. What is a tamal tico? Structure and soul. Unlike Mexican tamales, which use corn husks, tamales ticos are wrapped in large green banana leaves. They are larger, heavier, and more moist, tied with natural string or thread, almost always made and eaten in pairs, symbolizing unity. Traditional components: masa, corn dough flavored with lard or chicken broth. Filling: seasoned pork or chicken, carrots, green beans, rice, bell peppers, onion, and sometimes prunes or olives. Wrap: fresh banana leaves, softened over fire or hot water. Ties: natural twine, banana fibers, or thread. Tamales are then steamed, not boiled or baked, over a pot of water for about 1 to 2 hours. Each one is a complete meal, rich in texture, tradition, and layered history. The family factory, tamaladas, and generational labor. Every December, Costa Rican households turn into mini factories, producing tamales by the hundreds. This ritual is called the tamalada. Children help clean banana leaves. Elders make the masa and fillings. Cousins wrap and tie. And someone always burns their hand in the steam. It's a community act. Tamales are made not just for eating, but for giving to neighbors, coworkers, delivery drivers, strangers. To give a tamal is to say, "I thought of you. I carried the labor of my past into the present, and I'm giving it to you, wrapped in something real." For the Costa Rican diaspora, tamales are even more powerful. Mailed frozen across oceans, smuggled in luggage, or lovingly recreated abroad with substituted ingredients. It's not just nostalgia. It's survival through food memory, regional and social variations. While every family claims their recipe is authentic, the truth is that tamales ticos vary widely depending on region and background. Guanacaste: masa may be more firm, with emphasis on local corn. Limon Province: Afro-Caribbean spices like thyme or curry powder may appear, reflecting Jamaican influence. Urban San Jose: you might find capers, olives, or even raisins, remnants of Spanish flavor. Mountain regions: simpler fillings with root vegetables, fewer European ingredients. These variations reflect migration, economic conditions, and cultural fusion, making each tamal a culinary record of place. Symbolism: the leaf as a protective womb. Tamales are sacred for what they represent. The banana leaf protects the masa like a mother protects her child. The steam activates transformation. Raw becomes cooked, chaos becomes order. The tie holds generations together. The giving of a tamal is a secular blessing. It is no accident that tamales are made for Christmas, New Year, and funerals. These are thresholds, moments of transition. And tamales are threshold food, carrying the past into the future. Post-colonial resistance through food. In a modern world obsessed with fast food, digital delivery, and one-click convenience, the tamal stands as a stubborn relic of slowness. You can't rush a tamal. You can't mass-produce it with machines. You can't separate it from hands, time, or community. And in this resistance to convenience, tamales teach something radical. That value is created in effort. That food is memory work. That nothing meaningful can be made alone. Final reflection: the tamal is time capsule. When you unwrap a Costa Rican tamal, you are not just unwrapping a meal. You are unwrapping a story told through ingredients, a memory encoded in spice, a heritage sealed in steam. And whether you're in Alajuela, Brooklyn, or Berlin, the first bite brings you home. The tamal is proof that culture doesn't survive because it's written down. It survives because it's wrapped up, passed on, and shared. Arroz con pollo, the celebration dish of a nation. Every nation has its party food. In Costa Rica, it's not cake or confetti that signals celebration. It's a pan of golden rice with chicken. Arroz con pollo is the dish of birthdays, graduations, baptisms, and reunions. Its bright color and rich aroma tell you something good is happening. But this dish is more than a party staple. It is the story of Central American fusion, a legacy of Spanish colonizers, indigenous maize culture, African seasoning, and Caribbean joy, all stirred into a single golden pot. Origins: Spanish bones, indigenous rice, Afro-Caribbean soul. Arroz con pollo, or rice with chicken, sounds simple. But in Costa Rica, it's one of the most emotionally loaded and widely celebrated dishes in the national repertoire. It likely began as a colonial adaptation. Rice, introduced by the Spanish, fused with native maize dishes and spiced with Afro-Caribbean herbs and vegetables. Chicken, once considered a luxury item, became more widely accessible by the 20th century, cementing the dish as both festive and practical. Unlike Gallo Pinto, humble and everyday, Arroz con Pollo appears on special occasions, yet it never feels extravagant. It sits at the crossroads of abundance and modesty, the perfect metaphor for Costa Rica's national spirit. Anatomy of Arroz con Pollo. What's in the pan? Essential ingredients. Chicken, usually shredded or chopped. White rice, cooked in chicken broth or pre-soaked. Achiote, annatto, for color, gives the rice its signature golden hue. Bell peppers, onions, celery, garlic. Peas and carrots. Cilantro. Optional, corn, olives, Worcestershire or salsa Lozano. The flavor is mild but warm, not spicy but soulful. The aroma is instantly recognizable, bell pepper, chicken broth, and cilantro, a scent that travels through generations. It is typically served with ensalada rusa, Costa Rican potato beet mayo salad, fried ripe plantains, corn tortillas or bread rolls. And always, without exception, it is served family style, on a giant tray or pot, for everyone to share. Celebration food, when Arroz con Pollo appears. In Costa Rica, Arroz con Pollo appears at every kind of event that matters. Birthday parties, baby showers, baptisms and first communions, school graduations, church fundraisers, family Sunday reunions. It is often made in huge batches, 10, 20, or even 50 servings, in giant aluminum pots called ollas. The food is part of the memory. The rice is what's remembered just as much as the reason for the celebration. The dish embodies collective joy, not plated in isolation, but shared, scooped, and passed hand to hand. Cooking as performance, the ante behind the pot. In every Costa Rican family, there is one woman, usually an aunt or grandmother, who holds the title of Arroz con Pollo Queen. She knows exactly how long to boil the chicken, when the achiote hits the oil, how many cups of broth per rice, when to add the frozen peas, never too early. Watching her cook is like watching a conductor lead an orchestra. Every motion calibrated, every movement meaningful. And while recipes exist, they rarely matter, because this dish is about muscle memory, family memory. No written recipe captures the moment when she tilts her head, tastes the rice, and says quietly, "Un poquito más de sal," a little more salt. Regional and cultural variations. While Arroz con Pollo is nearly universal across Costa Rica, regional differences give it local flair. Guanacaste often uses more achiote and chopped cilantro coyote, wild cilantro. Central Valley tends to use shredded chicken and carrots cut like matchsticks. Limon Province, you may find jerk spice chicken or additions like thyme, scotch bonnet, or coconut oil, showcasing Afro-Caribbean influence. Tourist towns, additions like avocado slices or artisan cheese may appear for international palates. In all cases, however, the soul of the dish remains unchanged, a shared pot, a yellow hue, a taste that unites. Historical resonance, food as peaceful power. Costa Rica, unique among nations, abolished its army in 1948. In the decades since, its national pride has shifted from conquest to culture, from weapons to words, songs, and food. Arroz con Pollo fits perfectly into this legacy. It's a dish that feeds without hierarchy, that symbolizes unity without uniformity. It is the opposite of fast food. It's not made quickly, not eaten alone. It's slow, thoughtful, peaceful food for a peaceful people. The role of Arroz con Pollo in the diaspora. For Costa Ricans living abroad, in New Jersey, Toronto, Madrid, Arroz con Pollo becomes emotional preservation. It is cooked during holidays, shipped in containers, and recreated with whatever ingredients are available. Sometimes using saffron instead of achiote, rotisserie chicken instead of home-boiled thighs. But the emotion remains. One Costa Rican American in New York said, "My mother made Arroz con Pollo every time I brought friends over. It was her way of saying, 'Welcome, your family now.' That's the power of the dish. It turns any table into a community table." Final reflection. The golden thread of celebration. In Costa Rican culinary tradition, Arroz con Pollo is not rare. It's not sacred, but it's loved. Not because of what it costs, but because of what it means. It means someone thought of you, that something good is happening, that life, with all its unpredictability, is still worth celebrating, and that sometimes joy is yellow, made of rice, chicken, and the sound of people eating together. Sopa negra, black bean soup, and the power of simplicity. Not all national dishes come with noise. Some arrive in silence, in a warm bowl, a gentle steam, a taste that comforts more than it boasts. Sopa Negra, Costa Rica's iconic black bean soup, is one such story. It's a dish of the people. Poor in cost, rich in meaning. Simple in ingredients, but radical in what it represents. In every simmered bean is a trace of history, survival, and quiet resistance. Sopa of the people, indigenous, Afro-Caribbean, and colonial threads. Black beans, or Frijoles Negros, have been cultivated across Central and South America for thousands of years. Among the Bribri, Cabecar, and Corotega peoples, they were a cornerstone of the diet, boiled, mashed, fermented, or dried. When Spanish colonizers arrived in the 1500s, they introduced new cooking vessels, iron pots, clay cauldrons, and began to influence the way beans were stewed. But it was Afro-Caribbean culinary tradition that gave Sopa Negra its soul. African descendants, brought to Costa Rica during the colonial period, were masters of slow-cooked stews, turning humble ingredients into nourishment and depth. Beans, onions, and herbs were not just ingredients. They were instruments. And so, over centuries, these cultural practices fused into Sopa Negra, a dish found today in every province, every family cookbook, and every rural kitchen in Costa Rica. What's in a bowl of Sopa Negra? Unlike Gallo Pinto or Chifrijo, which are layered and complex, Sopa Negra is minimalist. The kind of dish that whispers instead of shouts. Classic ingredients. Black beans, soaked overnight and slow-cooked. Onion, bell peppers, cilantro, garlic, salt and pepper. Hard-boiled eggs, sliced and placed in the bowl before serving. Optional additions. A dash of salsa Lozano. A touch of cumin or oregano. Chopped green onion or chili flakes. White rice on the side. Corn tortillas for dipping. The texture is not too thick, more of a broth than a puree, but rich and satisfying. Each family has its preferences. Some blend half the beans. Some leave them whole. Some add a squeeze of lime. But the core of the dish never changes. It is humble, healing, familiar. When it's eaten, beyond the calendar. Sopa Negra isn't a holiday food. It's a recovery food. A reset food. A food for the sick, the grieving, the overworked. After illness, Sopa Negra. After a funeral, Sopa Negra. Coming home from travel, Sopa Negra. Broke until payday, Sopa Negra. Rain falling on a metal roof, Sopa Negra. The dish is so tied to emotion and atmosphere that it's often said, it's not what's in the soup, it's what the soup is in you. In this way, Sopa Negra becomes Costa Rica's emotional first aid kit, providing calm when the world feels chaotic. Cooking method. Patience, not precision. There are no exact rules for making Sopa Negra. The only real requirement is time. Step by step. Soak black beans overnight in water. In a pot, boil beans with garlic, bay leaf, and onion until soft, about 2 to 3 hours. In a separate pan, sauté bell peppers, more onions, and cilantro in oil. Add this mixture to the bean pot. Season with salt, pepper, cumin, oregano, and let simmer another 30 to 45 minutes. Boil eggs separately, peel, and slice. To serve, ladle the hot black bean broth over the eggs. Add a spoonful of rice if desired. Garnish with cilantro. In rural homes, the firewood stove adds smokiness. In cities, it simmers on gas stoves, unchanged in flavor. Some say the best version is eaten the next day, after resting overnight. Symbolism, food that waits for you. Sopa Negra is food that doesn't demand. It waits. It doesn't spoil quickly. It doesn't shout for attention. It sits in a pot, ready to welcome you when you come home, tired, beaten, or quiet. It is the dish of grandmothers, who make it early in the morning and leave it warming all day. It is the dish of widows, who learn to make it alone for one. It is the dish of farmers, who return from the fields with sore hands, knowing they won't need to cook from scratch, because the soup is already waiting. And in that waiting, we find the soul of Costa Rica's deeper cultural value. Patience, simplicity, care, regional and cultural influences. While the core of Sopa Negra is consistent, its interpretation shifts slightly by region. Guanacaste. Beans are grown locally and often seasoned with cilantro chayote, a wild herb stronger than regular cilantro. Central Valley. Softer textures and egg-heavy servings are common. Limón. Afro-Caribbean influence. You may find hot peppers, coconut milk, or thyme added to the broth, linking it to Jamaican pepper pot traditions. Even in its quietness, Sopa Negra tells of trade routes, labor migration, and ethnic fusion. Diaspora, memory, and emotional resonance. For Costa Ricans living abroad, Sopa Negra is often the first dish they learn to make without help. It's simple, familiar, affordable, and more importantly, it tastes like home. A Costa Rican woman in Toronto once said, "When I can't speak Spanish all day, I eat Sopa Negra. It reminds me I'm still me." This soup holds emotional architecture. It reminds people who they were, who they are, and who stood behind them stirring the pot. Final reflection, the power of simplicity. In the grand timeline of Caribbean food, where stories are often filled with heat, spice, and struggle, Sopa Negra is a whispered chapter. It doesn't come from wealth. It comes from necessity. It doesn't speak loudly. It listens. It doesn't perform. It heals. And that in itself is revolutionary. Because in a world that often prizes the loudest voice, sometimes it's the quiet bowl of soup that saves the day. Patacons, double fried identity on a plate, twice fried, always shared, and never wasted. Patacons are more than just a side dish in Costa Rica, they're a statement. Crisp on the outside, soft in the center, golden like the Caribbean sun. These smashed plantains tell a story of migration, resistance, and communal joy. From African roots to beachside bars, they carry the flavor of legacy, simplicity, and celebration. Ancient roots, African rhythm, the origins of patacons. Before they were patacons, they were just plantains, a starchy cousin of the banana, native to Southeast Asia and brought to the Americas through colonial trade. But it was African culinary genius that transformed plantains into something magical. During the transatlantic slave trade, enslaved Africans across the Caribbean developed a method of twice frying plantains. First to cook them, then to crisp them. It was a way of turning a cheap, tough fruit into something comforting, filling, and delicious. In Costa Rica, especially along the Caribbean coast in Limon Province, this tradition took hold. Over time, it spread inland, evolving into the beloved dish now known as patacons, crispy, golden rounds of plantain smashed and fried, then topped with whatever joy the cook could offer. Today, patacons are eaten everywhere from working-class homes to high-end restaurants. They're a snack, a side dish, a street food, and a symbol. What is a patacon? Structure and simplicity. A proper patacon is made from green, unripe plantains, firmer and starchier than their ripe yellow cousins. Preparation. Peel the green plantains, a task that requires skill and patience. Slice into thick chunks, roughly 1 to 2 inches tall. Fry once in oil until slightly soft. Remove and smash flat using a tortilla press, a bottle, or the bottom of a pan. Fry again until golden, crisp, and slightly puffed. Sprinkle with salt and serve hot. They are typically eaten with guacamole, refried black beans, chopped ceviche, garlic mayo or hot sauce, or simply with lime and sea salt. Patacons are never eaten alone. They are passed around, torn apart, dipped and shared. They are social food, conversation food, Afro-Caribbean legacy, from survival to celebration. In Costa Rica, Black Caribbean culture is most visible in Limon, a coastal province settled by Afro-Caribbean immigrants from Jamaica, Barbados, and Haiti in the 19th and 20th centuries. These communities brought with them coconut milk, cassava, yams, callaloo, and of course their plantain techniques. For Afro-Caribbean Costa Ricans, patacons were survival food. Plantains were affordable, filling, and didn't spoil easily. But more than that, they were versatile and satisfying, and made with rhythm, skill, and joy. Over time, patacons became normalized across the entire country, losing their status as ethnic food and becoming national comfort. But we must always remember, this dish was born from struggle and ingenuity. It carries the imprint of forced migration, cultural resilience, and Caribbean creativity. Modern use, from streets to stages. Today, you'll find patacons in roadside sodas, served with beans and cheese, at beachfront bars, stacked with shrimp ceviche, in gourmet restaurants, topped with grilled octopus and aioli, at football stadiums, wrapped in foil, greasy and perfect. They've even crossed into vegan menus, replacing tortillas or buns in gluten-free and health-conscious versions. But no matter the setting, patacons remain deeply Costa Rican, versatile, unapologetic, and always best when hot. They're also a favorite during Semana Santa, Holy Week, Independence Day street festivals, Carnival in Limón, and even as post-party midnight snacks. Cultural symbolism. The power of the double fry. The fact that patacons are fried twice is not just culinary, it's metaphorical. The first fry softens, it opens potential. The smash defines identity. The second fry strengthens, it seals resilience. Patacons, then, become a symbol of transformation. They teach that value doesn't come from rawness, it comes from process, from being broken, changed, and redefined, and still emerging golden and proud. Regional voices. Costa Rica on a plantain plate. Across Costa Rica, variations reflect geography and culture. San Jose, served with black bean dip or cream cheese. Punarinas, topped with seafood, often raw or pickled. Limón, paired with rice and beans, grilled fish, or pepper sauces. Guanacaste, sometimes served with avocado and shredded beef, carne macada. In tourist areas, they're styled like tapas, dainty, dressed up, and paired with cocktails. But at their core, they remain street food, people's food, ancestral food. Patacons in the diaspora. Memory in a bite. For Costa Ricans and Afro-Caribbean people abroad, patacons are often the first taste of home recreated. Plantains are now sold globally, in Latin markets, African stores, and Caribbean groceries. And making patacons becomes a ritual of reconnection. One Costa Rican student in Berlin said, "I make patacons for my roommates. They think it's just a snack. I know it's my mother's voice in a frying pan." That's what patacons do, turn memory into food. Final reflection, the golden circles of culture. In Costa Rica's culinary story, patacons are often seen as small, casual, secondary. But in reality, they are one of the most deeply rooted expressions of shared identity. They are indigenous by geography, African by technique, Caribbean by flavor, Costa Rican by love. And no matter how many times they're smashed, fried, or eaten, they always return. Because true culture doesn't disappear. It crisps into something unforgettable. Ceviche tico, coastal freshness, and Creole survival. It's the sound of waves, the sting of lime, the silence of a fresh catch hitting the table. In Costa Rica, ceviche is more than a dish, it's a declaration of freshness, of coastal pride, of survival through simplicity. Born from indigenous salt curing, shaped by African preservation, and touched by Creole intuition, ceviche tico is the bright, sharp taste of the Caribbean in a spoon. Salt, sea, and the origins of preservation. Before electricity, before refrigeration, before ice was something you could buy in a bag, there was acid, salt, and thyme. For millennia, indigenous communities along Costa Rica's Pacific and Caribbean coasts used salt, bitter orange, and lime to preserve freshly caught fish. These weren't culinary luxuries. They were methods of survival in tropical heat. Fish cured in acid became safer, more digestible, and easier to carry inland. When African-descended people arrived in Costa Rica, particularly along the Caribbean coast, they brought with them a knowledge of spice layering, pepper fermenting, and Creole heat management. And so, what began as a preservation method evolved into flavor, technique, and eventually a national treasure, ceviche tico. Anatomy of ceviche tico, the purity of the sea. Unlike Peruvian ceviche, which is often intense with ginger, sweet potato, and corn, ceviche tico is clean, bright, and minimalist. Core ingredients. Fresh white fish, most commonly tilapia or corvina. Freshly squeezed lime juice, not bottled. It must be acidic and bright. Onion, white or purple. Bell pepper, typically red. Cilantro. Salt and sometimes black pepper. Optional additions. Celery. Hot peppers, especially along the Caribbean coast. Dash of salsa Lozano. Coconut milk, Caribbean fusion versions. The fish is never cooked with heat. It is cooked by the citric acid, which denatures the proteins and turns it opaque. It is then chilled and served cold, often with soda crackers, green plantain chips, avocado slices, local beer or a shot of guaro, sugarcane liquor. Coastal identity. The taste of punarinas and limón. In punarinas on the Pacific coast, ceviche is everywhere, sold in beach stalls, fishing docks, roadside coolers, and even on buses in plastic cups. In limón on the Caribbean coast, the dish reflects Afro-Caribbean flavors. Coconut milk might be added. Thyme, scotch bonnet pepper, and chopped tomato are common. Sometimes shrimp or squid replaces fish. In both places, the dish is part of daily life. eaten before swimming, after work, or during festivals. It's a food of sun, salt, and sweat, made and eaten quickly, with the kind of joy only freshness can create. Class, gender, and ceviche vendors. For generations, ceviche vending has been a livelihood for working-class Costa Ricans, especially women and Afro-Caribbean entrepreneurs. Small-scale vendors. Prep ceviche at dawn. Chill it in coolers with ice. Walk beaches, bus stops, or local bars. Serve in small cups or plastic bags, with a toothpick and a smile. Ceviche is a dish of low overhead, high love, and incredible personal pride. Each vendor guards their secret. Too much lime makes it dry. No pepper means no power. My mother's recipe and hers before that. This is oral food tradition, passed without measurement, only memory. Symbolism, the raw made safe. There's something poetic about ceviche. It takes something raw and risky like fish, exposes it to something sharp like lime, and transforms it into something safe, nourishing, and beautiful. In this way, ceviche tico becomes a symbol of emotional transformation. It says, pain can heal. The harsh can become soft. The raw can become ready. It's not just food. It's alchemy, modern innovation, and diaspora adaptation. Across Costa Rica and in Costa Rican diaspora kitchens worldwide, ceviche is being reinvented. Served in tacos, martini glasses, or lettuce wraps. Made with avocado, mango, or even hearts of palm, vegetarian option. Combined with octopus, shrimp, or shellfish. Paired with beer, cocktails, or Costa Rican wines. And yet the soul remains, acid fish chill joy. In the US, Canada, Spain, and beyond, Costa Rican immigrants make ceviche as a social bridge. A woman in Los Angeles said, "When I bring ceviche to a potluck, people always say, 'What's this?' And by the end, they're asking me for the recipe. It opens doors." Ceviche is a conversation starter and a memory keeper. Ecological connection, ocean season, and respect. Costa Rica, proud of its eco-conscious image, increasingly promotes sustainable ceviche, using line-caught fish, supporting small-scale coastal fisheries, avoiding overfished species like sea bass, educating tourists on seasonal seafood. This shift aligns with Costa Rica's broader values: biodiversity, preservation, and respect for the natural world. So even ceviche, a simple dish, becomes part of a national ecological identity. Final reflection: the spoon that connects us. In the Caribbean culinary legacy, few dishes are as quietly powerful as ceviche. It requires no fire, no fat, no expensive tools. Just the sea, the land, and a little time. And in that combination, it becomes not just a meal, but a memory. A ceremony. A culture. One bite. One spoon. One moment of perfect balance between nature and man. Picadillo de papa, rural ingenuity, and peasant power. Some dishes don't need grandeur to leave a legacy. Picadillo de papa, a rustic blend of potatoes, ground meat, and vegetables, was never designed to impress. It was designed to stretch, to survive, to feed five with enough for tomorrow. But in that survival lies genius. Costa Rica's picadillo is peasant wisdom in a pan. Warm, practical, endlessly adaptable, and born from the daily rhythms of land and labor. The origin of picadillo, resourcefulness as culture. Picadillo comes from the Spanish verb picar, meaning to chop or to mince. It is a dish that exists across Latin America in many forms, but in Costa Rica, picadillo de papa, made with white potatoes and seasoned ground meat, is its most beloved variation. Its origin isn't royal. It isn't tied to any particular event. It doesn't show up in cookbooks from noble estates or on colonial banquet tables. It was born on farmsteads, in rural kitchens, in worker homes, where nothing could be wasted and everything had to stretch. The question wasn't, what do we want to eat? It was, what do we have? And picadillo answered that question beautifully. Anatomy of the dish. What's in a picadillo de papa? This dish varies from home to home, but the core is always the same. Traditional ingredients: white potatoes peeled and diced, ground beef or ground pork, onions, bell peppers, and garlic, cilantro, salt, pepper, cumin, and sometimes a touch of salsa Lozano. Preparation: dice and boil potatoes until just tender, not mushy. In a separate pan, saute onion, garlic, and bell pepper until fragrant. Add ground meat and seasonings, cook until browned. Fold in the potatoes gently, allowing them to absorb flavor. Add cilantro at the end for freshness. The result is moist, savory, and subtly spiced. It's often served with fresh corn tortillas, white rice, sliced avocado or a fried egg, or used as filling for empanadas or tortillas. Peasant power, the politics of the pan. Picadillo de papa isn't just a meal. It's a statement about resilience, rural strategy, and the quiet dignity of the working class. In a society that often celebrates innovation through wealth, picadillo represents innovation through necessity. A single pound of meat becomes a meal for five because potatoes are used not as filler, but as foundation. And that matters, especially in communities where jobs are seasonal, food security is unstable, families rely on single-income earners. Home gardens and shared crops still play a role. This is why picadillo is not just comfort food, it's infrastructure. Regional and cultural variations. Costa Rica's picadillos vary depending on climate, cultural influence, and local crops. Picadillo de chayote uses pear squash instead of potatoes, lighter, more vegetal. Picadillo de vainica, made with chopped green beans. Picadillo de papa con sardina, popular in coastal areas, fish replaces beef. Limón style may include Caribbean seasoning like thyme and chili. Each variation is a reflection of land access, migration, and seasonal bounty. But picadillo de papa remains the standard, the dish that binds grandmothers and grandchildren, city dwellers and country farmers. Gender, labor, and the home economy. In Costa Rican homes, especially in rural areas, women have long been the engineers of food logistics. They manage the budget, the leftovers, the need to stretch one meal into three. Picadillo becomes their tool of mastery, not just in feeding, but in managing emotional life. Kids eat it after school. Workers eat it reheated at night. Elders eat it with tortillas in quiet midday solitude. It becomes an act of care and calculation, as sacred as any ritual. Picadillo in the diaspora, recreating home with limited means. For Costa Ricans living abroad, in Brooklyn, Toronto, Berlin, picadillo is a memory meal. Easy to make, easy to adapt, emotionally rich. Even when ingredients change, russet potatoes instead of white, parsley instead of cilantro, the core feeling remains. It's a dish of tight budgets, late nights, I miss my mother moments, because you don't just make picadillo for guests. You make it for yourself, when you need something familiar and warm. The symbolism of chopped food, fragmentation as harmony. There's something powerful in the way picadillo is chopped. The fragmentation is not destruction, it's integration. In a world often divided by borders, wealth, race, and class, picadillo reminds us, small things when combined become whole. Cheap things when treated with care become valuable. Leftovers when repurposed become beloved. In this way, picadillo de papa is both culinary and philosophical. Final reflection, the genius of the everyday. At first glance, picadillo doesn't look special, but that's its secret. It doesn't rely on status, or complexity, or price. It relies on love, memory, and adaptation. It's a dish that says, this is what we have, and we will make it beautiful. In Costa Rica, that's more than a recipe. It's a worldview.